Welcome to Emotional Sobriety, the next step in recovery with Dr. Alan Berger and Tom Rutledge.
Hey, Tom.
I'm drunk.
Right. Fucking drink.
I've always wanted to meet Tequila Boy.
He's fun for a while.
Yeah, I bet he's fun at first, but then after, yeah.
Good to see you guys. Sorry I'm late. My dog needed to go out. I have many stories to tell about 8 days in the ice cold here. We've changed our relationships among me and the critters.
Well, you know, I'll keep an eye on the clock. Can you just give us like a real brief update? Like, cause yeah, you've been off the grid a little bit and like legitimately under ice.
We were without power for 8 days. I'm still stuck at the top of the hill because even after a day of 50 degree weather and rain, our driveway is still an ice slide. So, very freezing degrees for 8 days. And I mean, I'll tell you as we go along, it's just, I sent you some pictures. I think, I mean, we, six people here, two of us human, the rest of us animals. And we all just lived in one pile on the bed. And it was, we had to get up and walk. We had to, Dee Dee, and sometimes I had to go down to the horses. And then, but even the cats, you know how cats are just, they'll just do their own thing. Even the cats knew the drill. Everybody wanted in the bed next to each other and under the covers. It's like, wow. So we lived in, and we would get really, really comfortable, like literally every blanket in the house over top of so many that it was kind of hard to get out from under them. It's right. Like, but you'd get under there and warm, and then you go, oh fuck, I gotta pee, you know. And it was like, oh my god, it's been an adventure. And my and if we're checking emotional sobriety, it, you know, my, very very similar to when I checked back in after cancer treatment. You know, I don't give myself real high marks and just, but I mean, I'm good at being in touch with what's real and what I need to be doing, and knowing when I'm off the mark, which I think is a part. Maybe that's another thing we need to say. That's a part of emotional sobriety, is knowing when we're not.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Tom's nutshell is, can you describe how you think as well as you can describe what you think? In The Daily Stoic, Ryan Holiday offers a question that is simple and profound. Am I in control of this, or is the anxiety? Anxiety being the telltale sign that we feel the need to control what we cannot. When I am experiencing anxiety, then I am wasting valuable energy focusing on what I do not and cannot control. Once I recognize that I'm doing this, I shift all of my focus on levitating that chair with my mind. I love that image. This is a good example of focusing on process rather than content, focusing on how I am thinking rather than what I am thinking. These kinds of changes must be radical in order to be effective. You know, simple, but far from easy. And if you move the chair, please let me know. Can you describe how you think as well as you can describe what you think? No, I can't. I want to keep at it, though. Yes, I've been both off the mark and very anxious this week. And but I noticed that. I noticed the process. And, you know, we have our tools that we lean into to try and get back on the beam. And emotional sobriety, that's what it is for me a lot of the time. It's recognizing that I'm not emotionally sober. And in that, in that recognition, I can kind of start to practice some things to work on it from the outside in.
Right. Right. And I think as you read what I was saying, I was going like, it's important. I'll say it's important for me. It's important for me not to let myself off the hook with that, you know, because when you get to do this a long time, and this isn't just about what we've been doing lately, but this is about our recovery and through the years. It's it's not hard to figure to be able to recognize when we're screwing up, when we're off the mark. But the point here is, it really does, it is part of emotional sobriety that we are able to acknowledge that, take action so that we can. But sometimes that just means taking ourselves out of the game, putting ourselves on the sideline, and acknowledging to somebody. More often than not, what it means is doing that one thing that is so hard for us human beings, asking for help.
Yeah. Last night, I was up and I could not sleep for like hours. And I was just anxious about a bunch of things, like just worrying about a lot of it's fear of the calendar. I don't know if you guys ever have that because you're both pretty busy, but worried about either forgetting things on my calendar and screwing something up that I haven't even forgotten yet. and then worried, about certain like having made commitments and worried that I'm going to screw it up. You know, when I've got, as of this moment, plenty of time to prepare and, you know, avert such screw ups. And worried about my commitment to one thing, undermining my commitment to another. But usually I'm able to kind of, when I put head to pillow, I'm able to will myself into resignation. What tools do I have? I don't know. Like I can't chug some whiskey. That's not on the table. So, my brain, I think, just got tired, and then it was morning, and then I got started with you guys.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about prayer being, meditation, maybe being still and being listening, and prayer being more communication. I was thinking about that because by the way, I identify, it's not a joke, but I'm a space cadet, so I can make messes of any schedule or calendar. I mean, it's like, I'm just, it still freaks me out if I walk out into the waiting room of my office and there's somebody else that works there with me. But if there are two clients waiting, I sometimes will freak out because I'm going, oh hell, I've double booked somebody again. That's that. But you know what? When you just, I think I may be doing a good job of being fully in the present as we're talking today, because when you got to that part about tossing and turning, I thought, rather than thinking about what I do, I remember there's this little voice inside. There's this, not so little, but it's a voice inside of me that is a part of the higher or bigger self than me. He just says, you got this. You got it.
You know, it's interesting, Patrick, what you're sharing, because I'm going through some of the similar things that you're going through about, in a relationship. And, one of the things that I found myself, which is so interesting, is this need I have to be understood is so compelling for me at times.
Oh, shit.
And yeah, it's almost like when I feel misunderstood or mischaracterized, right? When someone is characterizing me with all of these bad intentions, and not to say I don't screw up at times, because I really do. But it's this fine thing between being open to feedback, but not letting the feedback define me. And so I find myself at times struggling with this thing about, if somebody is characterizing me a certain way, I end up trying to convince them that I'm not that person, the asshole they think I am, or whatever.
I can get so focused on it. It's like you're missing the point.
Yeah,
well, it's not even like you're missing me. You're missing the point. Why is it so important?
It's all about.
I can identify, but I can even get to the place where I go like, why is it so important that they get this particular point?
I know. In this situation, I realize that's my issue. It's that I lose sight of myself and what I am. So what do I need to defend that for if I'm pretty clear about it? And the issue, and here's the issue, is what I realized is that because I get threatened that if they think about me that way, they won't love me, they won't care about me. So then I try to convince them that way, and I prove I'm the asshole they think I am. It's such a circular thing, right? It goes round. It goes round and round. And, I get the feedback. I get the feedback. But, it's like it finally came to me the other night that, my God, man, this is what I'm doing in this situation, is I'm not hearing. I want to be heard, but I'm not hearing. See, that's what I came to. And that's a problem.
Well, and right. Well, but I think the other piece about that, Alan, is, and correct me if I'm off with you, but I want to be heard. This is where the compulsion comes in. I want to be heard now.
Yeah.
Now. It's like, yeah. You know, I lose patience with the whole situation.
Exactly.
Well, that's because I get anxious. See, that's the anxiety.
I know.
You know, if you don't understand me, you won't love me. You know, it's that kind of thing. Right. And so I get so threatened by that situation. And instead of being able to just own that, I react to it. And I, you know, I'm seeing now that there's that, if I could own it, I could get freedom from it. But when I don't own it and I act it out, then I'm caught in it. I feel I don't realize I'm so trapped in it. Even at the moment I'm doing it, I know that I'm fighting for something, that there's got to be a problem here if I'm fighting this hard, kind of thing, right? There's got to be something going on here, but I can't. I'm not able yet, and I'm doing good. I feel really good about what I just saw the other night when I really sat down and did an inventory on this thing and really took some time to back off and really look at it, because it looks like I'm trying to be right. And I understand that. Probably I am. I want to convince
part of you that is, because it's that's the place where people we work with this all the time with other people too, understanding why am I fighting like this is a matter of life or death.
Exactly. It's
because it's connected to that kid inside of us that basically is fighting for their life. And if they're fighting for their life, if my kid is fighting for his life, it means I'm not taking care of him.
Oh, yeah.
He shouldn't have to be fighting for his own life. It's my job to take care of that boy.
Not anybody else. That's true. It's
and
true.
We want to be loved, and we become less lovable, Alan. That's what you're talking about.
It's so true, man. So true. Can you love an asshole? Probably not.
or why would you want to?
Why would you want to, right? Oh, my God. When am I going to grow up?
So well, if we're talking about women, most of them have to learn how to love an asshole.
That's
the task before many of them.
Well, look, it's like Tom said, I can help somebody so much when I'm working with somebody on this issue. But then when it comes to me, I lose sight of some of these things, man. I just cannot plug in some of this. I am plugging in it now, and I'm feeling good about that part. But, you know, as you said, Tom, there's that other component of I want you to hear my point. I want to convince you right this moment. It has to happen right now.
Well, and what we're doing now is when we step back and deconstruct it, Dee Dee does not have to understand me to love me. I don't have to understand Dee Dee to love her. You know, and I mean, it helps me to turn it around, because the truth is there's a lot of shit I don't understand about how Dee Dee thinks. And we've been together for 40 years. It's like, I mean, you know, I could describe what I think she does, but how she thinks it through. But it's still pretty foreign to me. And it's like, somebody helped me along the way that basically, it was kind of during the COVID thing where you were isolated with your partner, whether you liked it or not. And it's like, it helped me so much to just forget, I don't need to understand. I don't need her to understand me. We need to focus on loving each other. And by the way, that has a lot to do with understanding, because, but if you start with the love, very often when couples leave my office now, the last thing I'll say is something to the effect of just be nice to each other and just don't forget that you love each other.
But it's these ghosts that rattle their chains that make that difficult at times. See?
Well, it's holding, you're right. It's holding your focus while these other guys are the ghosts rattling your chains. They're trying to distract you. It's all this chaos. You go like, no, I've got to keep my focus.
I do get distracted.
You'd mentioned doing some inventory to work out the kinks in this latest situation. What does that look like? What does that look like for you these days?
Because
you've done
a lot of inventory. I truly believe that most of what we do is projection. So if I'm saying I want to be understood, it means I'm not understanding. If it's saying I feel like you're not getting me, it means I'm not getting them. See, so what I try to do is to reverse it. And I try to step back and say, what am I doing that's creating this reality instead of focusing on what they could do different? So I try to bust up that dependency thing, where if they were like this, I would be able to feel better. So instead of making them responsible for me, I try to say, what do I have to do in this situation to get some freedom? And for me, that path is always owning what I'm doing and taking responsibility for it. So I know that. So then I back into this, Patrick. I say to myself, what is going on that's making it hard for me to own what I'm doing? And you know what I got was I felt ashamed about myself. I felt shame about how I failed this person that I cared for. And I didn't protect them. And I didn't act to create a safe atmosphere in this family. And I didn't. She was right, you know, that when I look back at what happened in this situation, I can take responsibility to see where I did not step in a firm and just way. I didn't have to be an asshole about it, but I didn't step in to stop what was really, as I stand back, some very inappropriate behavior from a nanny that I had. So when I see that, and it went on, it wasn't just one incident. That probably, there was probably four or five situations just like that. And what it did is it really made this other person feel unsafe, you know? And so I can really now see, at first I defended that. It's like, and I was caught. I mean, the conflict I had is the girls really loved that nanny. So, you know, I was caught in between honoring what I thought the girls needed, and they really didn't. The nanny was toxic. And when I saw it, I acted very decisively, right? And I let her go, and I challenged her, and I was right on top of it. And every one of the things that she did that was inappropriate, I did challenge, but I didn't put teeth in it. You know what I mean? It was like I wasn't firm enough. I said, this is wrong, and I got upset about it, but I didn't go further and say, look, if this happens again, you're gone, right, kind of thing. I didn't do that until like four or five incidents had happened, but by that time, a lot of damage was done. And so when I look back, you know, and I feel this even now as I say it, it's hard for me to face that sometimes I'm not the man I want to be.
And I don't know, women will have to tell us the story here about women, but I'll tell you about men. We have a very definite white hat addiction, and it's hard for us to see ourselves as anything other than the good guy, you know, and we're really not being, so without the white hat, then what am I? I'm the black hat. It's like, no, there's a lot of gray in hat choices.
And I was saying that. That's one of the ways I started to come through this. But I see, I've got to know that instead of trying to convince her of that.
Right. No, we got to. Yeah. And we got to know in somebody else's eyes, there are going to be times. I mean, there are times in my actual life where I deserve to wear the black hat. But even, you know, when I'm doing well, it's like in other people's eyes, this is about taking up for ourselves with ourselves. I got to be okay if somebody sees me as the black hat. It's like, you know, you're the bad guy. I get it that person sees me that way. But that's one of the things that triggers me, like what you're saying, Alan, is like, no, you can't see me that way. You know, it's like, and then I become more unlovable.
Yeah, right. No, listen, man, Patrick, that's to me what I'm trying to do is to say what was I doing that made it hard for me to take responsibility for what was going on instead of trying to defend my behavior. That's number one.
That's so right. Say it again. Let's write that sentence down. What was I doing?
What was I doing? To create this reality, right? This situation.
Well, but even more, what you said, to make it difficult for.
So what was the step back and be responsible for, and then to take.
Yeah, I want to get this sentence exactly. Okay. What was I doing to make it difficult for me? Finish that. What is that?
To take responsibility for my behavior.
Okay. Take responsibility from out of here. Okay, got it.
Right. So what I realized last night is the shame. I'm ashamed when I'm not living up to the expectation that I have, not only that she had for me, but the expectation I have. I want to be that kind of man. I have been that man at times in my life. The situation I was in, there was conflict, and I understand it. I want to be a good dad, too, and I was trying to balance these two things, but I realized that was a mistake. Safety really, in my opinion, needs to trump everything else. If people aren't feeling safe, it's not a good deal for anyone. And it's a bad message to send to my girls even. So I realize I really dropped the ball big time on this one, you know, and of course it created a lot of pain in the other person.
I bet all three of us could give examples of where we realize we've done something that we regret and or a way we regret that we then next step was we wasted time feeling bad about it. Feeling bad for ourselves. And it's like, what we need to do is we need to get better at making those corrections, stepping up, getting back in the game. And, you know, it's like we watch people who are athletes, you know, what they call short memory. You know, you just drop two passes, get back in the game and catch the next one.
Yep.
You know, and for me, if I was a football player, I would not be good at that. My little should monster would be talking to me while I was going out for that third pass. I'd have to work harder to be able to put that behind me.
Well, I think you're a lot more healthier than I am. See, what happened to me in this is I didn't even get into I wasn't owning it. So I wasn't even beating myself up. I was looking at what the other person was doing. So I was totally deflecting any responsibility. So now when I saw it the other day and I asked myself, what has been the resistance I've had to facing this truth? And I got that it was shame because I wasn't living up to this idea that I had and that they had of me. We were on the same page about that. I want to be that kind of guy. We have been.
That's a point you're making that's extremely important. It's like we are who we are. And we're good people. That's the thing. It's like those of us who've grown up with this critical condemnation in our head, it's like we're fighting for just to be able to get to the starting line of being a good person. We are. You know, everybody we're talking to, everybody we're working with, you know, we are. That's not the question. But I'll tell you what, Alan, the nutshell is this one, because and not even to have to take it to the answer, your answer of shame, but just I love asking good questions. And I think this question that you have here today, which is what was I doing to make it difficult for me to take response? What's it doing for me to be responsible for myself? It's like everybody put that question in their pocket, man. That's a really important tool.
Yeah, and it is. I stumbled on it the other night when I was struggling with my feelings about this whole thing. It's helped because when I started to sit down and when I let go of the shame, I could go back and I could see where I really did drop.
Yeah.
And take responsibility for it. Now I understand.
And it's not the end of the world. You did it. You know, I messed that up.
I hope the other person can forgive me. If not, I understand. You know, it hurt a lot. But you know what? The other thing I see is that I also give myself, I feel shame about it, but I also understand the conflict I was in. I was torn between those two things, and I was really trying to figure out how to make decisions that I thought in the long run would be best for everyone. But I lost sight of some very important priorities. And that's when I was trying to balance this thing, I realized that my balance point was off, that the way it was balanced was not going to work for everybody. It was favoring one side of the equation and not the other side. And that's what I couldn't see before. I thought I was. And see, that's my, whatever you want to call it, arrogance, pride, or whatever it is. Now, I give myself some credit. I did bounce off some of these things with therapists. And I don't, I, you know, look, they did their best. But they were also looking at the long run with me and not the effect of it immediately. And that's okay. I mean, I was doing it too. I mean, so I lost sight of that too. So, you know, it is interesting.
That's another, well, it'd be at the risk of being self-serving here with my theme is, it's like that's also a process awareness. That's how you're thinking. Okay. Thinking long-term is there's not a right way to think and a wrong way. It's like there are different ways of thinking. And if we can understand our own process,
I would go the other way. I would think too short-term. Right. And so I was trying to get a big picture, but I realized, see, this is that point about being flexible. I needed to do both. But somehow, if I would have addressed the safety issue, I was dealing with the big picture, but I couldn't see that at the time. And so I let this person create a lot of trouble in this family. That was my job as the, you know, I hired her. It was my job to deal with this thing. And so I did drop the ball. I feel sad about that.
Well, I'm not trying to let you off the hook, because I think sometimes we need to put ourselves on.
Hang me.
No. Sometimes I think one of the things we learn is how to, without shame, hopefully, put ourselves on the hook, you know, go like, this is my bad. You know, I did that. But the idea is, when your language I'm listening, though, is like, I let this happen. You know, it's like you hadn't figured it out yet.
No, I had.
You know, the language indicates almost a knowledge you didn't have. You know, I was allowing this bad thing to happen.
I was allowing it. But what I didn't understand, Tom, was that I was missing something. You're right. I couldn't see. What I couldn't see at the time, right? I couldn't see that the issue that I was missing was really the more salient. It's like the kids that are looking at the beakers of glass. And when you put the large beaker of glass next to the other ones and you pour one of the glasses in, the kid said, that's got more juice. I was doing that. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
I was missing the most salient issue in the discussion.
And it's funny how that always begins. It's a thwarted defense mechanism that we have, you know, like the inability to see is us, you know, in a very misguided way, trying to protect ourselves, when to actually be aware of the truth is going to be easier on us in the long term.
If you think about it, it's a survival mechanism that we have to kind of we have to rise above a little bit. I'm realizing I'm just writing nutshells out of this, but this says when we learn from an experience, it doesn't mean that situation will never happen again.
That's
what it
true.
Means. The next part of it is what it means is I have more information.
Yeah,
that's for future reference. Because see that when you were talking, Alan, what I was thinking is, so many times I've been in situations that it's with the process. I've been in situations where I don't think I ever would have said it this way, but ultimately the goal was, I'm going to fix this for good.
Yeah.
I'm never going to make this mistake again. It's like, of course I'm going to make this mistake again, you know, and that's one of the reasons. And I heard you say this same thing, Alan, before, that I think we both have said this in various ways to our clients, is measure your progress in response time, not in absolutes. It's like, hey, wow, it only took me 24 hours to figure out what an idiot I was that time. You know, it's like, that's progress.
Yeah. You'll get it down to 12 hours eventually.
Sometimes you get it to immediately. I mean, you really do. I mean, think about the times nowadays, the things that you never understood. You'll be right in the middle of a sentence and you go like.
In a meeting with Joe one time, I was talking about how, you know, whereas before I would mess up and it would occur to me right away. But then because of that flood of embarrassment, you know, I would hem and haw, and I would wait a while before, you know, attempting to clean that up and make it right, you know, with the other person. But the life hack that you figure out is that, no, as soon as it dawns on you that, you know, you've made a mistake and you've got something to clean up, you could just do that immediately. And it's all the better.
Well, that's the thing that, Roger and I used to joke about that a lot. Is one of the things we would say is we got to be really careful to not take too much pride in our humility, because we actually start to get really excited about being actually after all these years to be able to do that, to go like, oh, look, I'm wrong. I just recognized it.
Alan, just so you know, I've been imagining that white hat on you this whole time, and it's still firmly intact. So you're never knocking that white hat off.
Well, look, I realize that the white hat means is to own this stuff, is not to try to be perfect, right? I mean,
absolutely. That's how to be a good guy.
That's how to be a honest. Good guy, man, is to really
be honest.
It's not what I used to think. See, that's back to this letting go of our old ideas. See, I had this old idea that to be a good guy, I had to do everything perfect and right. And I still have that. There's still, like Tom said, it's that young little boy. If I would have been this way, then I would have gotten the love that I didn't get. Mm-hmm. You know, when I did some of this EMDR work, when I went back and I was dealing with the trauma around after my mom announced my father's death the night before, he died in the hospital on the December 26th, right, the day after Christmas at about 2 a.m. And she came in and announced it in the morning. And I was I was devastated. And I was crying and I was standing next to my sister. And she announced it and she walked out of the room after she announced it. She didn't come over and grab me and my sister and give us a hug. This is terrible. We're going to be all right. And there was no reassurance or recognition or empathy, right? I mean, and I understand it today that she was so overwhelmed by her own grief and pain. There was no room to take care of anyone else, right? That's how I'm thinking about it now, at least. But what happened in the EMDR, I realized that somehow I blamed myself for her walking out of the room, that if I would have been a different kid, maybe a better kid, that she would have been there for me. So I took responsibility, as a lot of kids do. I've heard kids do this when are sexually molested. I wonder if I did something to encourage this person to behave that way with me. And I found myself, and then it was very interesting. The therapist I was working with, she's a great therapist. She really helped me a lot with this. She said to me, her name is Melissa. She says, you know, Alan, I think we do that because we want to think that we had some control over something we didn't have control over. So we blame ourselves for what's going on instead of just accepting it wasn't available for you and dealing with the nothing of it. That's hard. You know, I want to think I could somehow have an impact and maybe have changed that very painful situation. There's some things that, what do we say in the Serenity Prayer? Accept the things I cannot change. And that's hard to feel that powerless. I hate being powerless. I mean, and I remember some of the times I felt powerless in my life. They were horrible times, right? And the same thing then happens with this situation of being misunderstood. That's another piece of it, right? I want to try to have an influence over what's going on. I want to control what's going on. So I try to convince that I'm not that way in trying to have control over a situation that I don't have control over. And if I just had more empathy, it would have been so much better. But, you know, look, I am so glad that I'm getting some insight into this stuff. That's why I say every relationship is going to cause us trouble. And our job, if we can do it and to do what I'm trying to do in this situation, is unpack it and learn from it as much as we can so that we can continue to move forward. Our life force wants to move forward. And I am convinced today that we get sick when we're stuck. That's what creates the disorder.
None of us are powerless. None of us are without choices and things. It's like what happens is we just get fixated. And when we're kids, we don't know this. So we're not responsible for the fact that we do in fact feel powerless over our lives. No wonder our defenses have to develop so concretely. I've got to take care of myself entirely.
That's right.
Because there's nobody else going to do that.